Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today I have Michael Appel on the line. He's Managing Director and Head of the Retail Practice over at Getzler, Henrich & Associates. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Adam. Great to be with you.
All right, Michael. So excited to get into today's topic. So driving performance and results through embracing technology for retail turnaround. And you've been working on retail turnaround for quite some time. So excited to get into that. But before we do, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So, Michael, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Michael, what mission matters to you?
Well, the mission that matters to me is to work with retail companies on all parts of the spectrum, from companies that want to improve performance, who are doing well, to companies that are stressed, or for companies that are up against the wall. And we have a great firm, Getzler Henrich, that has focused on helping companies across all types of industries for over 55 years to navigate the challenges of business. And I had the retail practice, and that's my focus.
Yeah. What how did you get interested in restructuring initially? Like, where'd all that start for you?
Okay. Well, I sort of fell into it, to tell you the truth. And I spent the first 20 years of my career as a merchant, first at Bloomingdale's for 10 years, then at a company called Fortunoff, which was the sort of a precursor to Bed Bath & Beyond. Mm-hmm. And then I was president of a company called Hofritz, which was a gift specialty retailer, national specialty retailer that focused on cutlery and personal care. And after I left that company in the early 90s, most of the companies that were out there were experiencing some form of difficulty. So I started working with challenged retailers, or retailers that needed an interim CEO, and helped them navigate through those challenges. And that's how it started. And then I had my own firm for many years. I worked for one of the premier turnaround firms called Alex Partners. And for the last 2 years, I've led the retail practice at Getzler Henrich, which is really the premier turnaround and restructuring and operational improvement firm that's focused on the middle market. So that's in a nutshell. All right.
I wanna stay in those early years a bit longer, because obviously we're gonna be talking about digital and some of the things that are taking place now in present day retail, turnarounds. But what were some of the challenges that people were facing, or retailers were facing, earlier in your career? Like how did all that start?
Well, I mean, look, retailers always is the fastest moving industry out there, because it's closest to the consumer. So with retail, and retail is a difficult business, because you have to be good at so many things. So, and you can do everything right. And then all of a sudden you have a macro event, and you have to pivot and figure out how to get through it. So I think that's the sort of the unifying factor in that regard. In the early days, I think, when everything was done sort of manually, right? Yeah. I can remember doing assortment plans and, spreadsheets almost manually. And then you got to Excel, right? And, when you look at the change, the ability to process large amounts of data, right, and come up with the right answer through technology, I think it's a game changer. Yeah. And also just the ability for companies to embrace technology in running their business and turning around their business has made a huge difference. And that's something that despite the fact that I've been in business for many years, that I've always been very interested in and open to and embraced. And I think companies whether they're healthy or stressed, that don't embrace that are going to have a really difficult time surviving today.
Yeah, and I love a good Excel story, Michael. Anytime I get to plug it in, because I feel like we take it for granted so much right now. But that Excel changed banking. It changed so many industries. So I just like that you even said it, that at one point for all of our younger audience out there, Excel didn't exist and we had to do things manually, right?
Exactly. And you know, and somehow you figured it out. But that's because that's what was available. Yeah. And now today, if you go into a company and they're doing everything on Excel, you know that that's a problem, right? And and also, you know, the technology platforms that are available to retailers today, you know, it's not very difficult for most companies to be able to implement those platforms, and so. You know, both from a cost and time and resource perspective, it's just so much easier. And then, of course, you have the cloud as well. So you've got all these opportunities that are there. The biggest challenge very often with many of my clients is to get them to embrace change, right?
Yeah.
Because change is for most people is very scary. I look at it exactly the opposite, which is, you know, this is an opportunity to turn your business around, to improve your operations. It's great. And, you know, for most of the technology solutions that are out there, most of these companies will do a proof of concept. So you're not betting the ranch, you know, in that regard. You're able to do that proof of concept, see the ROI so that when you pull the trigger, you've got a pretty good idea what's going to work. And then the issue becomes, okay, with all of the different solutions out there, what are the ones that are really going to work for your company and have the most impact? And those are the, you know, the prioritization of that is very important.
So Michael, circling back to something you said retail can be a difficult business because maybe you do everything right and then something macro happens or some other external event happens that you have no control over. And all of a sudden you have to pivot or figure out or to navigate. Other than, let's just say COVID, because that's a very recent example. What are some other examples like throughout your career or example that you've seen something and you're like, man, like all these businesses, you know, like what are some things that you've seen?
Yeah, well, COVID's an extreme example, but you know, but I think it's, you know, the financial. In COVID's an extreme example, but when you look at the financial crises, the real estate crises, the savings and loans crises, they all had an effect on the economy, right? And in most of these situations, and when you think about the Great Recession of 2008, 2009, that was a combination of real estate, the stock market, that basically, you know, it almost turned off the spigot of people spending for a period of time. And it also affected the luxury market for the first time. So when you think about those things, all right, there's always something that comes around the corner, all right? And so you have to be able to say, okay, quickly assess the situation, what's going to happen, and what are the levers that you have to pull, right, to be able to navigate your way through to the other side. And I would say the one thing that is always a big issue is liquidity, right? Because if you don't have the sufficient liquidity to buy you the time to navigate through these crises that could be unforeseen, then you're going to be in trouble. So, and I started as a merchant. So, I sort of went to the other side, which is, well, if you don't have sufficient liquidity, then everything else is immaterial in that in that regard. So you always have to focus on that piece of it as well.
Do you feel starting as a merchant helped you in being able to execute what you do now?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's sort of my secret sauce because the world in which
it's in your blood, right? Like it's in your blood.
Well, and also, I mean, I think the issue is today with restructuring is that you can always, not always, but in a restructuring situation, you can restructure your balance sheet. But if you don't fix your business model, all right, you'll come out of Chapter 11 or restructuring And, you know, it won't be long before you're back where you started. And I think that the ability, and when you're doing a turnaround, it's the ability, you have to work on multiple levels at the same time. So you have to work on parallel paths. So obviously you're looking at liquidity, you're looking at your balance sheet, but at the same time you're looking at you've got to start looking at the business operations, right? Both from a merchandising perspective, supply chain perspective, human resources perspective, and attack all of them at the same time so that you can get to the other side and have a viable business. When you're finished with your restructuring activities, whether it's in court or out of court.
How is it working with, like, what's it like working with the teams that you're working with? I mean specifically at the companies that you're restructuring. I mean, I'm from my outside vantage point looking in, I'm just thinking, you know, you come into this company that needs to be restructured, and, you know, maybe some of the management's going to stay, maybe some of them have to go or be replaced. You're also looking at the model overall of a business and seeing, is it viable? Like, what's it like working with those teams?
Well, every situation is different. Okay. Yeah. And you have to recognize that fact, and you have to look, you have to assess, is this going to be a viable business going forward or not? And a lot of these things you have to do pretty quickly, right? Yeah. You have to assess the viability of the business, and assuming that you feel that it has a viable business model, then, you know, I have sort of my little playbook, right? Assuming that that's the case, my playbook is, you have to get a deep understanding of your customer, right? Because if you have an understanding of your customer, the things that you do will be logical and make sense. And very often I go into companies both in retail and consumer products, and particularly in retail, they have very little consumer research. So, you know, we try to, if they don't have it, we try to quickly but thoroughly get consumer research to understand who the customer segments are. You know, the old retail thing was like, I know who my customer is. Well, you know, it's not one customer. You may have four or five different customer segments that behave differently, and you need to understand that, and you need to decide, well, who are the segments that are going to, that you're gonna win with, right? So for example, when I was running Rue 21, we had five customer segments. Three of them were very, very interested in fashion, and two regarded clothing as either utilitarian or I'm going to buy the cheapest thing that's out there, right? So if you're in the fashion business, you don't want people that are only interested in utilitarian or cheap clothing, because you'll never make money on them. So then you have to focus on the customers that are aligned with your brand, and you do that, and then. So you have the understanding of your customer, which is kind of basic, you would think, but you'd be surprised how many pretty big companies don't really have a very clear picture of who their segments are. So you need to do that. Then you obviously have to assess your team very quickly and say, you know, who can stay and who needs to go. And I think there are some people in the business that they just want to come in and clean house. And I don't believe that. I think you've got to look at your team, and you may, you know, your merchant or your marketing person may be weak, but your supply chain guy and your HR person is strong. So you have to say, okay, you want to make sure that you keep the DNA of the company, right? You don't want to lose that, because it's very easy to do that. And you have to remember too, is that for most of these companies, they were quite successful at one time. So why were they successful? You know, what do you want to keep, and what do you need to change? And then the other piece of it, as I said, is once you have that, okay, those elements, then you can start to execute. And you have to execute against product, right? Because everybody, sometimes when people talk about retail, you hardly ever hear them talking about product, okay? It's AI or theft. Or this or that, and they're all important, but it all starts and ends with the product, right? Because that's the business that you're in.
Why do you think that is, by the way? Like, why do you think that people don't talk about his product as much? Like, why do you think that is? We've gotten away from it. I agree with you, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is because you have a lot of, you don't have the same, very often you don't have the same training that you had. And also, especially with the larger businesses, they're very siloed.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I started many years ago at Bloomingdale's, I mean, you had a different kind of training. All right. Mm-hmm. And you had really fabulous merchants where product, you know, it started with the product and understanding the customer. And I think today that's not as much the case. Where you do see that, I think, is with the sort of the entrepreneurial startups. And that's where a lot of the talent is today, as opposed to the larger, more kind of siloed companies. So
talk to me about the competition for retailers and competing with giants like Amazon, and especially when it comes to, since we're talking about product, like, and kind of systems, I mean, free shipping, no free shipping. What does that cost? Does it make sense for the model? I mean, talk about just what you see in that space.
Yeah. I think the issue is that, you know, if you've got, it's very important for you to have a differentiated or curated product. So that whether it's online or in stores, you know, whether it's it's your own branded product or if you're curating, that the assortments are things that people will come to you for, right?
Yeah.
And will appreciate. And I think that when you get to that, if you've got something people want, all right, then you should not be in the business of losing money. And I think the issue with Amazon, as I've always said, is that, you know, everybody equates Amazon with free shipping. Well, it's not free shipping. You spent $150 a year, right? But people forget after they paid the $150 that they think it's free. Well, it's not. All right. You've just paid a lot of the shipping up front in that regard. And for a lot of retailers, you know, they're afraid not to offer the same level of free shipping, but it's not really free, right? And one of the things we found, and Getzler, you know, my firm has been in the forefront of advising our clients, you know, for at least the last 2 years, that they have to look at you know, analytically, the shipping thresholds, free returns, all those things. And we found with quite a few of our clients is that they were doing free shipping at amounts that were lower than their average sale. All right.
Wow.
So in some cases we just said, okay, you know, you're doing free shipping after over $50, your average sale is 100. I mean, you should be charging for anything under $100 or maybe even a little bit more.
And that maybe changes the profitability kind of immediately.
It's tremendous. Right? And then the other piece of it too, is the issue of free returns, right? And free returns are a lot more costly than people think. And the thing about it is that because when you encourage free returns, you're also encouraging people to order more than they need to. All right. Yeah. And especially you see this, of course, in shoes or anything where, you know, you need to try it on or you're not sure.
Zappos, that model. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was at the Sourcing Journal conference in New York, and one of the top executives at Zappos sort of said, he says, you know, my family even does it because it doesn't cost me anything to return it. On the other hand, it actually does, because not only is it the cost of processing, but also you've also spent this money on marketing, right? To make the sale. So you've lost that too. Yeah. So it's quite costly. And the other piece of it too is, and again, this is about product. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, a big reason why product gets returned, other than you just make it too easy for them, for customers, is that the fit is a problem. So if you as a company really have a fit that consumers trust, then they're not going to order three sizes or two sizes. They're going to order their size, and they're going to keep it. So and that has a big effect on profitability.
Yeah,
and it's something that I think that the industry is grappling with now, because all of a sudden we're seeing even Amazon's charging a buck if you return it to UPS. All right. Mm. And but if you look at a lot of other retailers today, they're starting to address the issue because, you know, especially if they have, you know, if they have large e-commerce businesses, mm-hmm. they you know, it financially it doesn't work out. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have to decide. You have to decide, am I better off to have a bigger business where I lose money, or am I better off to have a business that's smaller where I make a lot of money? Mm-hmm. And I think, again, you know, if the product's great, the customer, you know, will as long as your policies are fair, they'll go along with you in that.
Michael, product. Sign me up for that really profitable one, okay? I'm raising my hand for that one, Michael. Thank you. Let's get into the technology component a little bit here. Right. So like when we're talking about retail and a turnaround, obviously one of the things you mentioned earlier that I think I'd like to bring up again is that at some point, like these businesses were at some point successful, right? Something made them successful to grow at some point. Now, over time, whether they were, depends on the size of business, obviously, but if they're, but at some point, did technology leave them behind? Is it maybe like not adopting new technologies fast enough? Like regarding technology, where do businesses kind of get themselves in trouble?
Okay. Well, I mean, the first thing you have to talk about is really in terms of technology as a tool is it doesn't replace people. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a tool for the executives to run their business better. And the problem, the issue that retailers have been facing in terms of profitability is that today, you know, years ago, retailers were bricks and mortar, right? And maybe they had a catalog operation. Today, most retailers, in order to be competitive, right, mm-hmm. have to be omnichannel. So you've got your bricks and mortar, you've got your e-commerce, you may have a direct mail component, mm-hmm. and you have to be active on social media, which means that the cost of doing business has become so much greater than it was when it was a simpler model. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, in order to become stay profitable, become more profitable, you've got to be more efficient.
Yeah.
And so you have to find ways to run your business more efficiently. And that can come in many, many different ways. And so the levers that you have, there are many more levers than people believe, okay? Yeah. How do you improve profitability? Okay, better use of working capital, which means better utilization of inventory. I mean, mm-hmm. we used a great predictive analytics firm at Rue to help us figure out what we should buy, all right, and what we shouldn't buy. And it was based on, you know, it was really based on assembling consumer panels of our customers who through testing and gamification mm-hmm. had a history of choosing the winners, right? Mm-hmm. And so we assembled those consumer panels, then you show them product you're thinking of buying, and there's a high correlation between high scores and success. Mm-hmm. And there's a high correlation between low scoring items and big markdowns. So if you're doing that, you're buying better, you're buying the right stuff, and you're not buying the things that will be, you know, that would be high markdowns. Hmm. So you're getting a double whammy in terms of being more profitable, and you should be able to buy it in the right quantities so that you're turning the merchandise faster. And that's particularly obviously very important in apparel, you know, in that regard. So that's one element there. And then, but technology extends to every part of your business. I mean, one of the things we did at Rue when I was there was we knew that our customer was a lower income customer and they had limited access to credit. So we were the second company in the United States to adopt Klarna, which was the buy now, pay later platform. And that addressed the ability of our customer. They could buy more. They could buy more, one more item. Well, that had an immediate impact on sales. In that regard. And we were also kind of serving our customer because they wanted it, but they couldn't afford it, right? And so that is addressing, and now, of course, it's almost ubiquitous. Almost every retailer's got it. So that's another example of that, you know, and then another example that had to do with learning platforms and because one of the big issues today in retail is recruiting, training, and keeping your frontline employees.
Yeah.
We all know that, right? When we go in, and there's nothing that's more depressing is to go into a store that even if they have employees on the floor, right? You ask them a question and they can't answer it.
It hurts, especially it's so hard to get a consumer in the store.
Like, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So if you can, and there's statistics on this, if you've got a great learning platform, all right, then, you know, you can, from the point that they come, that start to work for you, their onboarding is done properly. They're continually learning. They feel better about their own ability to interact with customers and they stay. And reducing turnover can have a huge effect on both revenue and profitability. And the thing about it is, it's really interesting in that, you know, that there's, again, there's this feeling, well, you know, for most retailers, you know, turnover on the front line, the sales associate's going to be over 100%, et cetera. Well, I mean, Costco, you know what Costco's turnover is?
Oh my gosh. They showed on their badge when something.
7%.
How much?
Okay. 7%.
I didn't know it was that low, but I know on the badges that they have, like, I think it says like they're the
how one many years year they've been started, there, right?
And I'm always amazed and shocked when I'm like, wow, how do they do it? Yeah.
How do they do it? They do it because they value their associates. They treat them right. Mm. They pay them well and they get productivity. So, and they have, you know, happy employees. So when you go into Costco and you ask somebody a question, they're more than happy to help you out. So you have a great experience in that regard. Yeah. And so, and it shows you it can be done, right? There are retailers that can do it and they're the ones that are making money.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, Michael, I just have to say, you know, it's been great having you on the show today to learn more about the work you're doing, of course, and also just to document. I mean, I learned a lot about retail I didn't know. It's interesting to track that journey. But that being said, I mean, what's next? What's next for you? What's next for the company?
Okay. Well, for me, really, it's really to continue to serve our customers and build our retail practice, and which we're doing. And we brought on board some fabulous managing directors and directors and associates. And we feel that we give our clients, all right, the same degree of personalized service and expertise that some of the larger firms out there do at a much lower price, which in the middle market is really important because, you know, a $200 million company or a $50 million company just can't afford what a multi-billion dollar company can do.
Of course.
So, and we like to work very, very closely with the management teams so that it's a collegial cooperative effort to get to the best answer. And so we've been pretty successful in that. And we're looking forward to growing the business and continuing to evolve with the retail and consumer products landscape.
Hmm. If somebody's watching this and they want to connect with you and your team, how do they do that?
Two ways. You can email me directly at mappel@getzlerhenrich.com or call me directly at 917-789-3615. And we're always happy to chat.
Fantastic. So we'll put more information in the show notes, of course, on how to connect with Michael. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters and you haven't hit that subscribe button, hey, the wait is over. No need to wait anymore. Hit that subscribe button. We definitely love to have you back. This is a daily show and we're bringing you experts each and every day. Michael, really, it has been a pleasure. Thanks so much again for coming on the show.
Adam, an absolute pleasure and look forward to staying in touch.